Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Health Beat on WBCR, Bloomfield College Radio. We took a month sabbatical.
Yeah, I think it was about that. I think you actually went on break.
Yeah. We're back, though. We got a good show because we've got some pretty qualified guests.
The least.
Dr. Thomas Ortiz. You're the medical director at Clara Mass Medical Center. But that's not all.
Yeah.
He was also instrumental in the establishment of, listen to all these, Office of Minority Health, the Garden State Health Plan, New Jersey Medicaid, Managed Care, the Essex and Union Local Area Planning Board for the State Health Plan, New Jersey Kids Care, and the Community Partnership to Immunize Newark's Kids. You got a lot going on, man.
Back about 20 years.
And our other guest is Sarah Bonilla. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay, and you're the program manager.
Yes, I am.
At Clara Mass. And you actually spent some time in Ecuador.
I did.
That's what your bio says, doing some good. How was that? What was that like?
It was the best decision that I could have ever made. It helped bridge a lot of my interests together and really helps with my work here back in the United States.
That's good. That's good. Just before actually we start, just you have a lot to do, both of you, in like the Latino community, Latino, and you're talking about health care for them and stuff. Is language barriers, is that a, what does that add to the challenge of a
providing medical care? Yeah.
Well, significant challenge. You know, I've been a family physician in Newark for 37 years. At the Forest Hill Family Health Associates, I'm on Prospect Avenue and in the heart of the Latino community for Newark's in the North Ward. And, you know, we know that people respond to people of their own background and their own language. And particularly in healthcare, where you deal with such sensitive issues, personal sensitive issues, to get them across to a non-Spanish speaking patient, doctor when you're a Spanish speaker, it is kind of challenging, and it's very even more challenging for the physician as well, because are they really getting all the data that they need to make a decision, the right decisions on the treatment and the diagnosis and the treatment? So it is key to quality of health. It's key to getting good outcomes with your patients, having a doctor speak your own language. And some doctors are able to do it by bringing on staff that may be MAs and so forth, nurses that may be bilingual, front desk people that they can train to help interpret for them in their office. And that's a step forward. At Clara Mass, what we've been able to do is develop a translation program combining the technology, non-technology, where you have a face-to-face visit with a third person that's in the room that's doing the interpretation between the doctor and the patient. And then we also have, you know, the traditional members of the staff who get qualified and can be called upon to interpret in different situations, different departments for the medical staff when they don't have somebody there. Obviously, the best thing to do is to have, you know, personnel in the emergency room and on the floors and so forth that are actually delivering the care, that like nurses and MAs or that and doctors that can speak the language themselves. And that's one of our goals at the Center of Excellence for Latino Health in at Clara Mass.
Now you guys, Maya, by the way, Maya
Hi
and Lindsay
everyone.
Are back too.
Glad to
Hi
be
everyone.
Back.
Yes. Do you find that same, is there a lot of challenge with that in the health department?
We from a health department perspective, we have a goal to incorporate cultural competency into everything that we do. And right now, for those that are listening, we're doing a community health assessment. We're reaching out to our Bloomfield residents. We're really in need of reaching that Latino population right now. And if you're listening to this and are interested in filling out a community health improvement survey for us, you can contact us at the health department at 973-680-4024, and we'll get you that information back at the end of the show as well.
You know, I actually live right by Clara Mass.
Do you?
Yeah.
So do I. I'm right over the bridge in Kearney.
Oh, in Kearney? Yeah. Oh, I'm in Silver Lake
okay.
in Belleville.
Okay.
So I'm right there, like
yep,
turn the corner.
Right there.
Right there. Now, obviously, it's on. What's the actual address of it? I know it's on that Franklin Avenue.
It's on 1 Clara Mass Drive in Belleville. It's right across from the from Branchbrook Park.
And
where
I'm
all the cherry blossoms are in
yes.
the spring. Yeah.
By, what is it, Naninas in the
Naninas in the park.
Okay, yes, yes.
now it's a good wedding I went to there once.
It's nice.
It is really nice.
I drive
nice.
By
I
all
know,
the time and I never can go in. So.
Great food.
I'm reading this thing here now and all these programs that Clara Mass offers. And, you know, you've got Women's Health Center, nuclear medicine. Is that radiation therapy? Is that what nuclear medicine is or what?
No, nuclear medicine is testing different types of scans. It's an imaging center.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was wondering because I read that nuclear and I was like, yeah. That sounds horrible. But it's for imaging, x-rays, stuff like that? Is that what it is?
It's imaging different parts of the body using injections that light up certain organs and, you know, the heart, things like that, the brain.
You guys know too much.
Look at that. You just learned something new.
Let's talk a little bit about your guys' specialty, what you guys are into. The Center of Excellence for Latino Health. How did that get its start? Tell us a little bit about that.
Dr. Ortiz?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the leadership at Clara Moss decided to do this project, and they came to me. And so I said, well, let's call it a Center of Excellence for Latino Health, having somewhat of a unique quality to it in that there aren't any really established the same way we established it across the country, any hospitals. There's a couple of hospitals that have so-called Center of Excellence that do different projects, like John Hopkins does one with outpatient mental health. But we want to be a little bit more broader, more expansive, more direct in the community, actually reaching out to explain that, look, Clara Moss has a lot of services that can be useful to you and your family. You know, we're very user-friendly. We're very Latino-friendly. We have groups of doctors that are willing to take new patients that speak Spanish, that have qualifications, that are culturally competent, that can take these patients on, that we can refer them to so they can get their primary care, they can get their patient-centered medical home, their medical home established so that they're not running to the emergency room all the time or getting, partial care. And one of the things that we know with Latinos, we have lots of diabetes, three times more average than the average population, and therefore we have the consequences that go along with that. And if you get screened early and you get treated early, generally you can obviate those complications. But many times people don't get screened because they don't have access or they don't understand the literature, or they have some health illiteracy issues that they're not understanding that what you eat, your weight, exercise, your lifestyle can contribute to your genetic predisposition for diabetes. And we try and get that information out there early now. And we're doing that with younger kids by reaching into the middle schools first off, because we figured we need to get to the kids early. We need to get so they can take it home to their mothers and their grandmothers who are cooking in the kitchen and doing the shopping, so they can question, you know, what they're eating, and they can talk to them about, you know, what good nutrition is. Kind of bring the parent in on that as well.
I think that's so impressive. Mm-hmm. I really think that I think that what you just said as far as getting into the communities and. When we were trying to figure out how our health department was going to get into, the Latino population, we had trainings and just the culture, the structure of a family and how to get to who do you go to?
Who do you go to?
Do you go to the grandmother? Do you go to the mother? And structurally from us, we had to understand that. Mm-hmm. We had to understand that we had to approach different populations in a different way. And I think having this installed into the hospital setting is, I think, one of the best outreaches that I think exists out there.
Yeah, the hospital has certain resources that many doctors don't have access to, and it's very important that, you know, sometimes the problem is the grandmother and the mother, they just don't have the background in nutrition. They don't have the education, dietary education, so they're teaching bad habits,
right.
With very high caloric diets to their families, and it's being passed on from generation to generation. So we need to break that cycle. And the other area where lots of Latinos congregate is at church, and the various churches around the town. So that was another area that we wanted to be sure that we reached out to, and we decided we were going to try and create with partners. And, you know, the school partnership is with Aspira of New Jersey. They have grants to bring to have like an after school enrichment program, so we tapped into that. And also the Greater Newark Healthcare Coalition has some grants to do the faith-based initiative, where we teach nutrition and six courses. The churches get a little benefit from it, and then we follow up with trying to create a permanent
health ministry project.
Please do tell us about that. But what was one of the biggest? Did you have any surprises that came out of these programs that you kind of were like moments were like wow or something like that?
I think that just going into it, especially to talk first about the Latino health awareness project, as a Latina and as a student and as a first generation member in my family, I was very much aware of the things that I needed to go that I went through when I was in school. And having this position now and kind of understanding the empowerment that would have been nice to have while I was in school and being able to do that now with younger generations was something that I wanted to take advantage of. A lot of times when you're talking about the trust that you have, a lot of parents, especially within the Latino community, you trust your children a lot more and your children come with you to go to the doctor. Okay. And the doctor's talking to the child versus talking to the parent. So the child ends up maturing a lot faster in these certain situations. So giving the child that empowerment and not saying you have to do this, but more so you have the opportunity to do this for your family is something that I really wanted to channel in with this project. So when we have people coming into the school through the SBDEP program to talk to the students, it's a lot about what it's like to be in the health field, that there's different avenues that you can take to be in a health field. I studied public health. You know, you can be a doctor, you could be a nurse, you could be a nutritionist. And also just showing them the importance of just knowing things. You don't need to be in a health field to understand your health.
Yeah.
So just empowering them in that sense. And then when it comes to the health ministries, project that we're trying to do with the churches is information is better that when it comes from people that you trust. So if you're in a church and you're trusting the people around you more so than your doctor, they're the ones that need to be empowered with the health information. The doctor, just because you know something doesn't mean you're going to change your habits. Okay. So it's better to empower the people that are there on the ground floor and give them the resources that they need and be the that person in the background kind of saying, here's what you need, but you're the one that's going to give that information.
See, that's a trend, I think, now in the health community. This is what I've learned being with you guys. Okay? People like in these organizations like CELH, they're going out and educating the community. Hospitals are good when you need them, but they don't go out and educate. You have these organizations like the ones that you guys are involved with, and the health department. It's about prevention too.
Right.
You know. Stopping something before it starts, living a healthier lifestyle.
Correct.
And like you said, if you can get the information directly to the kids and have them, you know, hear it from when they're young, you know, don't, you know, put cooked chicken where you just had the raw chicken.
Right.
Which, like, that's, right. It's perfect. That's exactly what you guys wanted, because then half the stuff that needed to be treated in the hospital can maybe be avoided. I don't know if half.
I'm going to ask Dr. Ortiz this question, and I know for my work in public health, I think over time we've learned that changing the environment in which our community lives or allowing them to understand their environments better is really what's going to change their habits. Having to change, not having an environment that's not conducive to changing health habits is going to hinder our mission. And also, public health, and I think, is changing just in general. We're starting to understand that you have to kind of roll with the ball. You're not going to have these structured programs that are just because this is what, you know, this particular, you know, you need to go to your community. You need to study your community. That's what works. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, just a written program that's coming from maybe some, you know, a federal program or something like that. It's something that's really, like, understanding who your community is and serving them as a public health employee, whether it be a doctor or a health educator. And I want to see your opinion on that.
Well, yeah, the population health is a new public health, and it's gone inconsistent with the changes that are being made in the overall healthcare system as we go from the sick care system to the well care system. And we go from the what they call fee-for-service system, do more, get more, regardless of the outcomes, to a value-based system where doctors are going to be accountable now for the outcomes of their patients, their attributed patients, there's outcomes, there's measures, and there's utilization of services, because the cost behind it is really what's driving the government to talk about these programs. Obviously, the ACA coming through was very helpful in emphasizing primary care. Prevention, as you mentioned, is key to, you know, getting the population well. And, you know, if you have, like you say, if you're in an environment where you have a sick population, everybody's sick, they're all suffering from the same illness, there's something wrong with that environment, mm-hmm. and you need to go and identify and make the changes. And a lot of it is people's attitudes or teachings or myths or things that go on within communities. And that's probably part of what we're trying to bust. We've got a very excellent group of experts, subject matter experts, who have volunteered to join us in both programs. And they're doctors and they're nutritionists and they're people that have, you know, very good health backgrounds, pharmacists and so forth, that really know their subject matter and can really answer the questions that lots of people have, and also point to, you know, our movement toward health education and prevention and maintenance, so that you don't get into these chronic diseases that are uncontrolled, requiring lots of hospitalization, lots of visits to the emergency room. And also talk to people about the fact that the emergency room isn't that where you get your primary care. You need to have a doctor that you have a personal relationship with, hopefully a family doctor or a primary care physician that knows your case,
right.
that can receive your data, that can electronically, you know, manipulate your data so they can make the right decisions and help you make the right decisions on what medications to take, what doctors you need to see in terms of specialty and things like that. So that's all part of it wrapped up into this population health, public health initiatives that we're all kind of, you know, being remodeled into.
It's definitely great to hear that we have something like this literally in our neighborhood, and these services are available. So if we were going to be interested in the ministry project or the youth project, how would we go about finding out about it or getting involved, or whoever might want to?
Well, reaching out to me. I can give you all my phone number, my email address. My phone number, my office phone number is 973-450-2996. And if you call and leave me a voicemail, please leave your phone number so I can give you a call back. And then we can just start talking about how you want to create your health ministry within your church, because it's extremely important.
I have a question for, I guess, you two.
Okay.
Do you think, like, what you guys are doing at Clara Mass and organizations like this are decreasing the hesitation to maybe ask about, like, health related issues or even going to the doctor? Do you think that this is helping with that?
I think so. After just being out in the community and doing screenings, the center does screenings for glucose and for blood pressure. We've done it at different churches and at other different community events. I have had people call me, and I think the one thing is, when you have someone who speaks your language that picks up mm-hmm. the phone, you trust them and you have a connection with them, and you see that the person is actually calling to follow up and say, okay, what do you need? You needed a list of doctors. Here it is. What else do you need? Sometimes people call me completely that has nothing to do with the center specifically, but they need to know who to call within the hospital to do something else or to schedule an appointment. So in that aspect, yes, I do think that people confide in you. I had someone call me about pharmacy, that they needed access to a medication, and we have a discount program in the hospital for medications for blood pressure and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So it's just ask and you shall receive.
Right.
So also, I'm sorry. I just wanted to follow up on that, because, you know, the whole issue of immigration has come up, and we know that there's large numbers of Latino immigrants that may be living in the shadows right now, DACA members and Dreamers and things like that, that sometimes they want to get health care or questions, and they're worried about whether or not they need to give any other information about their status here. Okay. And of course, at Clara Mass, we don't do that. And of course, in my office on Mount Prospect Avenue, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what your legal status is here. It's you're a human being. Mm-hmm. You have medical issues. We're here to serve.
See, and that attitude, for some reason, like, especially this type of attitude, and you guys just be, like I said, going out and educating, it creates a comfortability that wouldn't be there.
I think removing that barrier, I think, right now is one of the most important things, which I think having you on the show,
right.
you know, as our first show of the season is so important for us, I think, to be able to, you know, have people giving them a comfort level knowing that they're going to receive that.
Right. And one thing that I have learned over the course of my career in public health is one of the most important things that you can do is create visibility in the community that you want to serve.
Right.
So what you've done is just that. You've created the visibility within the population that you want to serve. And not only that, you've created the follow through, which is just building this immense amount of trust. And now that's why they're coming to you for all these sorts of things. And you're going to be that, you know, that shed of hope anytime they want something.
Right.
And then they're going to refer to other people. And just the amount of people that you're helping is just tremendous and
we
just
hope.
So wonderful.
We hope.
Do you think the future of healthcare is headed this way, what you guys are doing? More it's like these organizations that come from Clara Mass. You have the hospitals, the big hospitals, and then you create these organizations within the hospitals or whatever, and then they're focused on different things in education. Do you think that that is where healthcare is headed?
Yeah, I believe that, you know, change is inevitable in healthcare. In my 37-year career, I've advocated for lots of things, probably 10 or 15 years before they actually happened. Who would have thought that we would have had, you know, Obamacare, you know, back in the 90s when we were talking about universal coverage and a national health plan and things like that we all still believe still needs to happen. Instead of walking it back, we need to walk it forward a little bit more now. We were making some good progress under the ACA, particularly with recognizing primary care as an important aspect of the centralized healthcare system, where, you know, people can get coordinated care throughout their life cycle. And so, you know, yeah, this is the way it has to go. And hopefully, you know, as people like me keep advocating for the community, people who can't speak for themselves, which has been my mission in my career, is to make sure that I advocate for the folks that can't advocate for themselves. And that happens to be, in this case, the Latino community, those undocumented and people that really need to get access to primary care early on so that they can avoid the complications of chronic diseases that we, diabetes, hypertension, cholesterol, those type of things. So, yeah, we need to make those changes. We have to. And everybody's got to be on that bandwagon.
That's amazing. I don't know if some of you may not know this, but I actually was not born in this country. I was born in Russia, and I came here when I was 7 years old. And I have this really crazy vivid memory of coming here and obviously did not speak English. And I remember I got really sick. And the only place that we were able to go was, you know, our plan of, you know, whatever it was that we were covered under. And it was like a 2-hour train ride. I grew up in Brooklyn. We had to take the train all the way to like Queens to go to where I needed to go. And I remember, and I always, you know, me being in public health and kind of understanding like a language barrier to not, and I remember sitting on my mother's lap and the doctor was talking to me and I did not know how to say what I was feeling because I had no idea because I didn't speak English yet. And obviously I do speak it now. So that is definitely something that resonates with me in not having a language barrier. There's always a fear that comes with not understanding. And it's almost an anxiety. It's not even because you may not want to be, you know you have to do something, but you're not capable. And it's not that you don't want to.
Right.
And there's such a fear that's associated with having a language barrier because it causes an anxiety to not be able to, you know, portray what you're trying to say. And in medical world, it's pretty important to say. Like, it would have been probably really important for me to be able to say what my symptoms were.
That fear will cause you to delay getting treatment, and then you end up with, you know, more severe consequences and much more difficulty.
Right. I see it as, like, an investment. So you're investing now, and you're doing these little things within your community. But the children that we have now are not children forever. They grow up. So just, when you invest now, you'll start seeing things changing later. And that's the whole idea with this whole program is prevention, education, empowerment, that you can go into a facility and even though you don't speak the language, you may have the language barrier, there's someone there who speaks your language. So there's no need for you to wait 5 years for you to feel very, very ill to go see someone.
Yeah. Well, and even because like when I'm out on the street, if I'm trying to talk to somebody who speaks a different language or doesn't even speak fluent English, maybe they just have broken English. I mean, it doesn't matter to me, but there obviously is a little bit of a disconnect. And anytime you have a situation that is medical, that immediately people are going to get a little more tense because mm-hmm. it's medical.
Exactly.
It has to do with their bodies and stuff. And if you any way you can alleviate that stress and create right. that comfort, you know, right. a good atmosphere. And I'd say speaking the language that they speak is a huge part of that.
And even from, and we were saying this before, culturally, there's a different way to approach things mm-hmm. from, you know, and I know this because, you know, culturally, hi, Mom. I always say hello to my mom on the show, by the way. I just want to tell you that. She's in Florida now. You know, and that's, I think, another thing to understand how to culturally, you know, approach a different community, whatever it may be. And that's the way to get to that community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing.
That's what we're trying to bring. Also, the Clara Moss is one of the other projects, which is to look at the hospital, look at its functions, look at its communication capabilities, to be sure that everything is translated properly, so to be sure that the signage is there, that the different departments have people that understand the needs of the Latino community, and we could increase the percentages of the utilization of those services, particularly in the area of mental health, I think is very pertinent right now, because we're trying to merge medical and mental health together again at some point in time. It's been so separated for so long, and it's unfortunate that we have that separation. You know, I think that we get into a more of a universal consciousness between mental health people and the medical people, that this is, you know, it's all about a brain disease, and it does need to be approached medically, and some of it requires counseling, and some of it requires, you know, social work to deal with some of the psychosocial determinants of health that have such an impact, particularly on the poorer community and the disenfranchised that don't have those kind of resources. So what do we want? One of the things we want to do is be able to make sure that the hospital provides those resources, at least at that level, and that we develop some community practices that also have that same frame of mind, that mentality, and like sort of like what I do. And one of the problems in New Jersey is we've created a system that's got 7 specialists to every 1 primary care doc. So you have an imbalance in access, and then who has access is the people with insurance, people with money. People that speak English, generally speaking, and the people that don't get the access are the ones with no insurance or Medicaid and don't speak English. So those are areas that we still have lots of concerns about, and until we really address them as a society and you know, stop, you know, shortchanging the docs that want to do the care for those people with very low Medicaid rates and, you know, the lowest in the country, why aren't we rallying as a community to say, you know, yes, we need to continue to expand Medicaid. We need to continue to expand the way it gets paid to the doctor so that more people have access to care. And access is the key.
Real quick, did you guys want to talk a little bit about the collaboration between Bloomfield Health Department
yes,
and Clara Moss?
Yes, we do. We're so excited. So being that we are close to one another, Clara Moss and Bloomfield Health Department really, you know, are, you know, we're starting to work on some partnership with the Center for Latino Excellence. I really want you guys to start looking out for some trainings that are going to be normally coming out only that were only available in English. We're going to start to work on them. They focus on drug prevention. That's one of my other duties here at the health department. I am the municipal alliance coordinator, and we're going to start to do some drug prevention and substance abuse prevention programming in Spanish. I think that's another lacking programming that's going on right now. So we, as the municipal alliance here in Bloomfield, knowing what our kind of base is going to, you know, is going towards, and piggybacking off of your amazing center, we're going to offer those programs. So I just want to repeat one more time about that community health assessment. If you guys can please, you know, reach out to the health department, 973-680-4024, and how important it is for us to get that information regarding the Latino community. Kind of heard it here, why it's so important. And for us to get the demographics, your needs, and then so we could cater better health programming for you guys.
I think that's something to emphasize on, is the importance as to why you need that information.
Exactly.
The information is needed so that you can better serve the community. A lot of times, as a community, anyone, we complain a lot about the things that we don't have. But when we have the opportunity to say, they're asking me these questions. Let's answer these questions so that we can be better served. That's what this survey is about. It's about you guys, the health department, knowing what you need to do, what's going on in order to better serve.
Absolutely.
That's great. Real quick, before we run out of time, did you want to mention the intercollegiate broadcasting
system? Oh, no,
system?
I think, Zach, you should mention it.
Okay. Well, Health Beat on WBCR.
Health Beat.
has been nominated for Best Public Affairs Broadcast, nice. Which is a category in the Intercollegiate Broadcasting Systems Conference in New York, so we'll be going there.
We are very proud of it, and Zach couldn't have... And so we are going to have to actually probably say goodbye to Zach.
Yes, this will be my last episode. I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot.
Oh, you did? Yes. I'm really.
By the way, that raw, putting the cooked chicken where the raw chicken was.
He learned that.
That
you learned.
That's why I laugh, because he learned that on one of our shows.
So astounding how I lived like that.
Astounding. So I just wanted to say this to Zach in his future endeavors, that one of the most advanced young adults I've met. You have done us quite a service.
I will accept that adjective, advanced.
Advanced.
Advanced. Thank you guys for joining
Tell
us.
Tell your mom I said that,
I will,
too, please.
I will. Dr. Thomas Ortiz.
Felicidades a toda mi comunidad hispano.
Bueno. I don't know. And Sarah Bonilla.
Thank you. Muchísimas
yeah,
gracias.
Thank you guys so much for your time, Maya and Lindsay, as always. Catch us next time. Not me, but... Catch Maya and Lindsay.
And a surprise new producer.
Yes, in February, right here on WBCR. Excellent.